It is hard for women to find support and for women to find the education and the knowledge and the community. That's part of it too. Because what happens is the community gets created where it's like everybody's on estrogen and GLP-1s and it's working and they're feeling good. And so it's like I can kind of use that as my endpoint versus it being like, is everybody adding more protein into their diet and changing the narrative around it?
Hello and welcome back to the Your Great Podcast with your host, Unique Hammond. I created this podcast to share healing stories, to inspire you to take on your journey and take control of it, and understand the power of nutrition as I am a food-forward practice. I firsthand see every day in my practice the power of nutrition. I just entered menopause and I feel fantastic. No hot flashes, no weight gain, no brain fog. I feel really resilient and kind of the best I've ever felt, quite frankly. Today's guest is my client, Dr. Hannah Lawler. She and I have worked together for quite some time with her hormonal imbalances, and it's wonderful to work with a doctor. She's a naturopathic doctor with conventional medical training. But just to see how much she values food as a powerful lever, both in her life and in her clients' lives. And, you know, Hannah has access to the candy shop. She's got the peptides, she's got the IVs, she's got all the things going. And she understands the incredible importance of the foundation of nutrition. So it's fun to have this lovely conversation with her, hear how she's applying the Bean Protocol not only to herself, but her clients and really supporting them on all levels. I love this. I hope you enjoy our conversation, and I'll see you on the other side. Thinking about like the last time I saw you on the podcast, we were talking about your healing journey.
I know.
How is your healing journey?
Well,
Well, actually, let's
I got
start
my
with
husk right here.
yes. Yes, and I have my hot water right here.
We got water, we got husk. It's been good. Even just this last period, when I start to feel a little bit of cramping, I start to get a little bit of that like anxiety because I know what happens if I don't take it. And like it could be so bad I throw up. And this last time I had like a little bit of cramping and I was like, let's just see what happens. And so there was like 10 to 15 minutes of mild cramping, and then it totally went away. I was like, oh my gosh, which I've experienced before, but because I've been so cyclical with my commitment to the beans, it comes back. And so that becomes my compass for things. And I think that that's everybody's experience. You kind of have your gauge of if things are off or not. And so even my boyfriend was like, you got your period? Like, usually there's signs. Emotionally, there's signs. So that's been good. And I feel like even the most recent time I ran my labs, my estrogen wasn't high like it used to be. My progesterone wasn't low like it used to be. My energy is good because I think I'm not like chronically borderline iron deficient like I always was. And now I'm entering into this fertility focus. And it gives me a little bit of motivation because I think part of what's hard for me, and like you kind of gave me a little bit of relief because I could get in shame with, you know, I mean, you know this about what I'm doing. And so, you know, understanding that I'm someone where I don't have a huge health crisis, you
Yes.
know, and I don't want to be taking like Advil every month. But for me, it was like I get these really bad cramps where it's like if I don't take Advil, it's horrific. My periods were so heavy. I just didn't have, there wasn't a motivation there that helped me to stay consistent enough. And it's been, I've had to like dig a little bit deeper into this patterning of why do I tend towards this idea of like, well, what can I get away with? You know? So, but it's been great. It's like, it's so, it feels good to at least know that I have a solution.
It's interesting for all of the future casting that we do as humans when it comes to our monthly cycle. It's so hard to remember. Let's just say for some people, it's 2 bad weeks of the month, or 1 bad week, or 3 days, or
2 days of painful periods or luteal phase, you know, mood swings, it's hard to remember the other 3 weeks if you're only a week where you're kind of like not in the best shape. Mm-hmm. It's hard to remember those other 3 weeks of like, oh, I need to be doing something all month long. You know this better than anybody, and we'll back it up for a minute and kind of introduce you, but is that the period is a result of how we're living all month long. It's not just suddenly like, ta-da, it's like, oh no, it's actually how we live. It's not this surprise thing that happens every month with no consequence of how we live in our bodies. Would you agree, disagree? Like, what is your experience of that?
Yeah. And I, when you were saying that, it makes me laugh because how often as women do we get PMS and totally disregard it as PMS?
Oh yeah.
We have these things and it's not like, it's not my period though. It's not PMS. Like, this is real, but it's so easy to forget that a week later we felt that way. And I see it with patients too. They'll kind of like come in and I'm like, how are you doing? They're like, I'm like, okay. And I'm like, okay, how are the headaches? And they're like, oh, I haven't had any. So my point is we have those forgetters where it's like, if I'm feeling crappy for 2 or 3 days, but then I feel better, I lose some of that motivation.
Oh, so for sure.
Totally agree.
You're touching on something that's really funny because before I got diagnosed with endo, for 1 week a month, I wasn't myself, but I thought I was a more honest version of myself. I thought that I was in the wrong marriage. So literally, like, I would instigate kind of a divorce conversation once a month, mm-hmm. thinking that I suddenly was just seeing the truth about my relationship. In my luteal phase, there is no truth in the luteal phase. The luteal phase will lie to you, especially if you have wacky hormones like I did. But I would be convinced that I'm like, you know, I just don't think this is a good relationship for me. And then like my period would come and I'd be like, huh. But if he would have said like, oh, it's just your period, I would have punched him right in the nose. I would have been like, how dare you belittle my inner truth?
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting. My younger sister is pregnant right now. And so early in her pregnancy, wasn't feeling quite like luteal, but she said basically like her BS filter, like she just had no filter. And so we kind of have this discussion around, I agree that there's should never be any like decisions or actions in the luteal phase because there's that heightened experience. But there is part of me that feels like there could be information to be garnered from that. Cause I feel like sometimes we gaslight ourselves. We feel that. And then it's kind of like, oh, no, it's fine. And I'm like, well, if there's something consistently coming up every luteal phase, it's not that I'm in the wrong marriage, but is there some type of conversation we're not having? Like, I do try to not gaslight myself into like, oh, I'm just having PMS. It's like, oh, this is actually bothering me. In my follicular phase, let's look at this a little bit further.
Yeah, I love what you're saying so much because what I used to do is kind of gaslight myself and being like, oh, I'm so wrong. Meanwhile, I ended up in a divorce and it wasn't the right relationship. And there was truth in my luteal phase lunacy. You know, it was just fiery and unscripted. I felt all Scorpio in my luteal phase. I felt like I was just walking around with a tail, just being like, fuck with me. Go on.
Well, that vengeance that comes up too. It's very Nat Mer and homeopathy where it's just, there's a little bit of that I am Batman that comes out.
Come at me. I'm ready. It's kind of interesting. So I think what you're saying is actually very valuable. Notice these potential deeper truths that are coming up and then in not a heightened state or a hormonal fluctuation, reevaluate them to see like, okay, what I will say is that I have clients who come to me who have that luteal phase truth serum. And as their hormones start to re-regulate with eating well and sleeping well and taking care of themselves, that when that goes away, they are very happy that they didn't throw their relationship away. It does speak to potential of the relationship needing some work, even if you are in the right relationship. But yeah, it was kind of interesting to witness that in my practice.
Exactly. That's why documenting is so helpful because how fun is it to like go back and like read old journals and like, I'm like, oh wow, I really thought that was a big deal. And now it doesn't matter, but it is helpful to go back and be like, wow, I really was feeling this way, or because we forget, life is so busy. It's like we, you know, we only have so much time to pay attention to what's happening.
You know, you are speaking to my soul right now, because I haven't journaled since I was 16, because my journals were found and all of the information was used in horrible ways. And I haven't journaled since. And what's interesting in my life is that journaling keeps swirling around me. The only time I've ever food journaled was when I food journaled when I was sick. So I could see what was bothering me and really like be a proactive participant in healing my gut. I had notes going all the time, but I always left feeling out of it. Like I would just do scales, like 1 to 10. How is this, you know, kind of thing. Yep. And it's interesting that you say that, because recently my younger daughter brought up the fact that she was reading old journals about old relationships, because she's like, what's kind of crazy is that if you don't write stuff down about how you're feeling, your brain starts to morph the information to tell a different narrative. And she's one of those people that just, she journals all the time as a way to kind of like regulate and chart her life. And she was like, it's so funny, because in my head, this one relationship was the love of my life. But going back, I was like, oh, fuck. That was not the love. There was a lot of bad stuff going on there. And I was like, isn't that interesting how your mind morphed the narrative? And so I think about that. And now you're saying that. And I'm just like, okay, maybe it's time that I healed that relationship, because I think there's incredible value in having a place to just pour your soul.
And it'll be interesting too, to kind of see what comes up for you. Like, are you going to be really protective of it? Are you going to try, like, you know, is like, what's that whole process of writing? And so it makes sense. It's the same reason why people don't want to fly after any kind of traumatic experience. Like, I wouldn't, it's not safe.
It's not safe. And like, that's where I remember doing morning pages, and she was just like, you know, put everything in your soul in the pages. And I was like, I can't do it, man. I can't do it. Like, it's just,
somebody's going to read this. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Putting a pin in that, I've got some work to do. Yep. So Hannah, I love you. And we've been together, working together on various levels since 2020, when you were in your last year of school, right? Okay. And you're a naturopathic doctor with a private practice now.
Correct.
And how long have you been in private practice?
So I have been in private practice now, I guess it's been for 4 years. Yeah. I make a lot of house calls. My patients have high access to me, and it's been nice because I've been able to almost create this loophole. If anybody follows human design, as a projector in human design, I'm always looking for the efficiency gain. I've been able to work with patients in a way where I don't feel like there's so much red tape or systems or bureaucracy that I have to deal with. And now it's a very privileged experience for my patients to be able to have this level of access to me. So I definitely recognize that. But it's just nice because if they have a quick question, or there's a medication, or they see their cardiologist, they have somebody that they trust with a medical license that they can talk to. And it's not like I'm waiting for insurance or I'm having to do this. So it's been able to really create an environment where I can care for my patients in a way that feels like I really get to practice medicine, if that makes sense.
No, totally makes sense. And it's so exciting to hear that you do house calls. I feel like that personal touch is so missed in our medical world. You know, I feel like doctors used to make house calls. And if anything, people have gotten further and further away, where now it's telemedicine. And telemedicine is amazing. But it is interesting how that personal touch for certain people that need that, it just must be so healing for them.
Yeah, it's so nice because you really, I mean, you're in their home, you're in their space, you get to know either their kids are there or their pets are there. And then you start to treat other people in their family. And so it does have that old school village vibe. Where I live, it kind of feels like there's this community that gets created, people in my life. So it's nice because I get to practice medicine and care for people, which is what I love to do. But the community is propped up around me because of it. I feel like I'm the village doctor.
Yeah, I love that. Do you ever poke around in their pantry? Because But that's what I would do.
That's another thing about why I love it so much is because they're in their kitchen and they're like, what about this? Read this. And what's helpful for me is actually seeing what they think is healthy. Oh, I found this. What do you think? And so I'm turning the label over and I'm looking at it with them. So I get to go through and I'm like, no, no, yes, keep that. Especially my older patients, like no idea of reading labels or what's healthy or what's not. And there's also so much information out there. And so to see them making different choices and then being excited to show me what they made or what they bought or whatever, it really becomes this more intimate experience.
Yeah.
And then better out, there's just such good outcomes that I see from patients.
I'd love for you to speak to this as well, of like what an important player nutrition is.
You know, it's like in the tenets of naturopathic medicine, it's the basics. Nutrition is everything. It really is. And it's so hard because the Western lifestyle has zero support. Part of the challenge is just getting them to cook for themselves, and myself included. Like, I just didn't have a schedule that it would allow for it. I didn't have the motivation for it. Even I had the values, like the way I grew up and all of that. But I think people are misinformed. There's not a culture for it. And you don't always feel different right away. And it could be hard to get people to make lifestyle, habit. Like, I need you to start cooking when they order out every night. That's a huge thing to overcome. And so it's hard when there's not that immediate payoff.
Well, I think it's also like learning how to look at a menu and yes, order through the eyes of not what do my taste buds want, but what does my body need? I mean, there's so many things that are essential, and they're not essential for shits and giggles. They're essential because they're the building blocks of health. And I think where the kind of gray area is, we do not exactly know how much we really need of each, which is why so many people are walking around with nutritional deficiencies, which lead to long-term health issues, right? If your body doesn't get essentials, what they need every day, then you're missing all of these building blocks. And what does that do to cells in the body if they're missing building blocks? Do they just not make that cell? If you're trying to make a cake and you don't have key ingredients, then how are you going to make that cake? I love that I just use cake, by the way.
I know. And that's sometimes where like the lab testing can help me out a little bit, because if I run a micronutrient panel, if patients see in black and white, oh, wow, I really don't have enough vitamin C. And yeah, then they're willing to make the changes and like we rerun it and they see the improvements and they also feel better. That helps, because a lot of my patients do have the value, but if the value and the understanding isn't there, you're right that people don't think it matters that much.
Yeah. They're just like, oh, I eat what I want. I eat what I taste good and I should be getting everything I need. But based on your genetics, based on your stress levels, based on your period, based on so many things, your body might need more of a certain ingredient that month to kind of shore up how much it's using. And also, we live in such a stressed out society that we tend to need, depending on the person, more of the real nutrients that we're seeking, whereas the pleasure foods are usually not as full of the foods that we need. I mean, the ingredients that we need.
Yeah, the consumptive dopamine is a challenge, because that does become, you know, and it's always these like little small habits that it's just like, well, it's just a little piece of chocolate that I have, or it's just a half a glass of wine that I have. I'm like, okay, well, if it's just a stop, you know, like that's, yeah. And you kind of turned me onto this idea of like negotiating health with patients, because that happens so much that it's like, well, what if I, or if I'm like, you can do whatever you want, but if you want the truth to be that you eat these foods and you don't have your symptoms, that doesn't exist. There's this truth and honesty, that conversation that has to come out, where it's like, you can do that. I just need you to understand the correlation. And that is a good starting point, I think, for a lot of people, is like, I just need you to understand that X equals X in this situation. It's never going to equal Y. And if you're okay with that, and we have to kind of constantly put you on these like supplements and certain things just so you can like have some dairy, we can do that. I can help you do that, but there's also an opportunity to take it out and see what happens.
Would you say that it's a fair comment to say that most people have lost faith in the nutrition world because of how many fad diets have thrown them around, only to be later, oh, we were like low sugar and then we were no fat. And we have these massive trends, and cigarettes are healthy, right? Medical too, right? Like there are some pretty messed up things that happened in our history of health and wellness. But do you think that there's such a backlash on these trends? I mean, they continue to happen because of people who kind of fear monger and get a lot of notoriety because people are responding to fear. But I feel like there's this trust that's been lost that what people say in a few years is just going to come out as being the wrong thing anyway. You know, it's like, well, how do I know what actually is?
Yeah, what's like, again, it's like that idea of like, well, what's the truth?
Yeah.
You know, because then I start to get these like messages of like, you know, do I need to be, or what did you, or have you heard of? And I'm like, oh, that's what's happening right now.
I mean, good on you for not being on social media.
Yeah, no. Don't, I am on social media. Okay. I mean, I go through phases where I'm not on it as much. So sometimes I don't need to be on it to know. And even it's sticky out there because even for me with like my education and my knowledge and my experience and all these things, it's because I want to stay up to date with most current and what's cutting edge. I have to like not get pulled by all these little snippets of sound bites. And what I think happens is that people aren't feeling well, so they're vulnerable.
Yeah.
So what happens is they constantly hear these solutions and maybe they don't have proper guidance. And then they're hearing from their friends and family what they're trying. And then what happens too, if you try to do something and change it, oftentimes you're met with a lot of backlash. Because if you're doing something that's different than the people in your environment are doing, you kind of get this like judgment, which I've gotten in all different spectrums. And luckily I saw my dad deal with it. So I was like, it never was off-putting to me. But I think if somebody's feeling vulnerable, they're trying something new, and then someone's like, why aren't you eating sugar? Or, oh my God, you again with all your fad diets. Or, oh, well, you know, like keto's actually like better. And oh, underlying current of people feeling unwell and misguided. And so anything that's different from them feels threatening. So a lot of what I do for my patients is I tell them, people are going to think this is weird. People are going to have opinions about this. You're going to see things on social media that are going to oppose what I'm telling you right now. And what I challenge you and ask you to do is if you have questions, just text me or send me a message, or I will talk to you on the phone, or allow yourself to have this N of one experience and find what works for you. You're working with me because you want a personalized, unique thing that is built just for you. So let's try to create that so you're not feeling as susceptible to the inevitable backlash you're going to get as you make changes. You kind of find out who your friends are sometimes in these healing journeys, because there are people that will be more supportive of you when you're sick and you start to get well and they don't like it.
Oh, yeah. And also people, I think when you differentiate, I think of it as differentiating yourself. And you don't see, I mean, there's all kinds of backlash. If you don't eat dessert, there's a weird backlash. Like, oh my God, why don't you eat dessert? But I've seen no greater backlash than my vegan clients who decide to add in eggs or something. And it's like the excommunication from the vegan cult is ugly. I feel good, but because of the backlash, I just don't tell them I eat meat.
Vegan, vegetarian for 22 years. And yeah. I never thought I was going to eat meat again. And there's a few people in my life, I'm like, oh, if they found out that I ate meat, they're not super close to me, but they would be, especially my friends in more of my spiritual past, because I didn't, there was a spiritual component as to why I did it. And I had to be really sure of myself. It took me a year before I ate it again. I told some of my vegan friends, I told people in my life, and most people were like, oh my gosh, finally we can enjoy certain things with you. But you have to fortify yourself. Yeah.
And be ready to stand your ground and to really, I love that you said fortify, because as soon as you said that, I think of a strong spine. I think of a really strong spine that allows you to go, I love you and I'm doing this for me. And I still want to share meals and I love you no different. I think it's interesting when love is pulled, when other doesn't match who you think they should be. It's a very judgmental scenario. It's not unconditional love. It's I love you if you are versus I love you no matter who you are. So I wanted to ask a couple of things for those who don't understand what a naturopathic doctor goes through to become a naturopathic doctor. Like, what is your path when you decided I'm going to do this? What was the path forward for you?
Like the logistics path or like my personal path, like the
education.
Yeah. So education wise, me personally, I have a BS in biology. You don't have to have a science degree, but it's the same course requirement as conventional medical school. So everything that you have to do in, you know, college, getting your bachelor's degree is going to be the same. Okay. And then as far as the actual schooling goes, it's 4 years, just like conventional medical school. Our first 2 years are actually very similar because we have to learn about the body, how it works, what goes wrong. So all the biochemistry, the physiology, the anatomy, all of those things are the same. And then even in our later years, like the pathology, immunology is all the same. And then we even have to learn how to suture and do minor procedures. We have to learn all the pharmaceuticals. And I remember when I was in school, one of my colleagues' husband was a MD, and he was like, God, you guys have to do everything we do. So our clinical hours are a little bit different, but the curriculum itself is actually more extensive than a conventional medical school because we have to, you know, we're licensed to treat and diagnose medical conditions. So we have to be fully trained like you would in a conventional medical school. But then we also have different philosophy courses. We learn a lot more about nutrition. We learn about homeopathy. We learn about physical medicine. We learn about, you know, the hydrotherapy practices. So what's becoming very trendy right now is very naturopathic. And so naturopathic doctors were kind of like the OG, like functional medicine doctors, as far as this idea of like figuring out the root cause. And then after you do the 4 years, and in the second 2 years, you see patients. So we have a teaching clinic where you see patients as a medical student, and then we have to take board exams. And that's 2 days, 8 hours each of a board exam, similar to a conventional medical school. Right now, there are residency programs, but they're not required unless you're going to be working in oncology. So there's a specific residency that you have to do to be like a naturopathic oncologist and to do adjunctive care with an MD oncologist. But with a lot of how the funding is and the licensing is, we just don't have the capacity to have all the residency programs that conventional medical schools do, but those are things that we fight for in Washington to increase our scope, to increase like the residency options that we have. And it's different state to state. Like if we were in Arizona, I could see you as like a primary care physician. I have no limitations on what I could prescribe. I can do minor procedures. California is a little bit more limited. So education wise, it's 4 years or five, how long that takes you to get your degree. 4 years of the medical school, and then an optional 2 to 3 year residency. Exactly. That's okay. They basically train us to be like primary care physicians.
Okay, cool. That's really cool. And a lot of work. Good on you. Cause I remember talking to you and you were pretty stressed out, but you also really seem like you're in your lane. Like you're doing the thing that you want to do, that you love doing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, cause I was on a conventional route. So when I was in my undergrad, I took the MCAT, I went and interviewed at schools, and then I kind of had some like life intervened. And then I was introduced to naturopathic doctors, and it kind of, you know, I was like, I can be a doctor and also have these values. And I didn't even know it existed.
And in your practice, what do you feel like you're really good at? Where it's like when that person walks in the door and you're like, yes, I got this, like confidence. Or do you feel that way with anybody walking in the door?
I'm confident in what I do, but the thing that I can do with my eyes closed for sure is hormones. Like in any phase, whether that's women that are having irregular menstrual cycles, they have PCOS, they have endo, anything that comes to the cycle, I'm very confident in that. And then perimenopause, menopause, I'm very comfortable treating that. I do a lot of bioidenticals. I educate women on what this transition looks like, how the, you know, the different metabolic changes that happens. Because oftentimes people come to me and they're just like, I don't feel like myself anymore. Whether that's because they're going through menopause or whatever it is, it's I just don't feel like myself. And everybody's saying that my labs are normal and I don't know what's going on. So the hormones are a big one. In a coastal town, I do see a lot of environmental things. I have good referrals for that, but I do a lot of like mold detox protocols. I actually do a lot of cardiometabolic stuff. So a lot of patients come to me wanting to get off their statins and blood pressure meds. So that's something else that becomes a really cool conversation around, well, why is your cholesterol high? It's not just for no reason. Cholesterol is a protective mechanism. What's it protecting you from? Let's figure that out. So those are kind of three things I'm very comfortable with. And then that usually leads to a different discovery as to what's going on. Thyroid stuff is common too.
Yeah, that's a huge one. I did this little health event this weekend. Two people out of the 25 people had Hashimoto's. And you're just like, why are women? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Because why so much Hashimoto's? What is happening?
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of different reasons the thyroid kind of becomes like the canary in the coal mine. You know, part of that is just because it's more exposed to our environment.
A lot of people perfume right here. Bad idea.
Yeah. Bad idea. Yeah. Typically when I start to dig into the Hashimoto's, I mean, the gluten is definitely like a thing. So if I have a Hashimoto's patient that isn't cutting out gluten, we got to start there. And I think.
Is that gut? So is there a big component to Hashimoto's that is gut?
Yes. I think that it's basically something that your body is dealing with. Is it from stress? Is it from a virus? Is it from a food? Is it from something in the environment? Like I actually have patients, I'll run what are called halogen tests on them. And these are basically things like fluoride, chlorine. They're all in that same pillar as iodine, which is required for testosterone.
They would be plugging into the receptor site instead.
Exactly. So what happens is they have, like I had a patient that had high bromine and she was an interesting case because had thyroid issues, put her on like medication, still didn't feel good, took out her parathyroid glands, could never figure out what was going on, couldn't lose weight, was super, super tired. I ran a few different things on her, but one of them was I ran the halogen test and even just getting her iodine and a few other supportive things, she only has to take her thyroid meds like once or twice a week. She also had pretty bad mold exposure and her cholesterol was high and she was severely allergic to the statins and they kept trying to push things on her. And so we started clearing the mold out of her system and her cholesterol is starting to go down and it's improving. So those are some of the examples of things in the environment. It's never just like your thyroid's not working. Your body's creating antibodies and it's attacking itself. There's a reason. There's something going on to where your glands are, for lack of a better word, like toxic.
These things don't, the body's not dumb. Like it's really smart. It sends out these warning signals and, you know, it's like, okay, where do we look at versus, you know, here, just take a medication for it. It's like, no, well, actually, what are downstream effects from this? Like what is going on? So that's great that you think about looking at, you know, the fluoride and the chlorine and all of that stuff. I was looking at your services. What are your feelings about hormone replacement therapy? And what are the risks that women have to consider with it?
So bioidentical hormones have come a long way from where they used to be.
They're still synthetic, correct? They just mimic our identical hormone makeup.
Yes. And it used to come from like horses. And this was part of the thing that was causing more of like the cancers and more of the issues in women. And so where the bioidenticals have gotten to, you know, as far as from like that, like longevity perspective, and even just more for like clinically, what I do see, not all my patients, but for my patients where they have symptoms and they can process them well. Cause I have someone when we try to put them on hormones and they don't feel good. And so it's a case by case, but for my patients that we put them on a little bit of estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, their skin is better. Their hair is better. Their libido is better. Their weight is better. Their mood is better. Can that be an option for without the hormones? In some patients with certain genetics and certain lifestyles and a certain mindset, for sure, everybody doesn't need it. But I do think that the evidence is pretty supportive as far as what it does for brain, bone, health.
As far as I know, they haven't run a lot of new studies. What they did was go back and look at the 2002 study and kind of reevaluate the information from that period. Has there been any long-term studies as to the newer versions of bioidentical and cancer? Like, have they done that research yet? Or is this now just based on the 2002 research?
So I went to a conference about a year ago. There was new research that they were presenting that was showing the bone density benefits and showing the lower risk of cancer. Okay. So I don't have it off the top of my head, but it was more than just the reevaluation of the 2002. It was new information. And the big takeaway from the big hormone experts that have been doing it for decades was they were green lighting it basically. And I have patients that have even gone through breast cancer, waited the 5 years. And I think it's really about sharing the risk with the patients. And I have some patients where they're like, I feel so much better. I'm willing to take on the risk.
Right. And I think being informed allows us to be empowered. Right? Yeah. Looking at the risks, reward, benefit. The thing, women have been going through menopause for a long time, but we're also living longer. The question I always have in my mind is, why are so many women sliding sideways into menopause? There's no education about the transition. I started educating myself at 45. I'm now almost 50. And I started making changes in my diet. I made changes 13 years ago, but I started anticipating menopause. I was like, okay, I'm 45. I'm getting normal periods every 28 days, but I know that's going to change. So I was tracking it and watching and eating really well. And I cut out alcohol and I started to do these very proactive things that I think a lot of women don't do. And so they end up in this place where they've got a dry vagina and painful breasts and their hair is falling out. That's another time where people get divorced, by the way, and they don't want to be touched. And so you have this thing sitting there that is like, oh, well, I can help you with all these symptoms. But more importantly, in my mind is how do we get women to take this transition seriously with their diet and lifestyle choices so that they might opt into hormone therapy, maybe, but it's not because they are suffering so much, to realize that we can be really proactive about that.
And I love that you're opening up that conversation. And it's things that I talk about definitely with my patients that come to me when they're having cycling issues. What you're doing now and learning now is going to really set you up when you go through that transition. Because unfortunately, oftentimes women come to me in a panic. They just need help. They're like, give me the drugs. I have some women that are like, okay, cool. Now that I feel better, let's work on these things. And I have other women that are like, cool, my symptoms are gone. I'm just going to continue living my life the way that I want to. And again, as a provider, I have to just meet my patients where they're at. And I think it's something that I've thought about too. I'm like, where's my next platform or body of work? Because I think it is hard for women to find support and for women to find the education and the knowledge and the community. That's part of it too, is like, if there was this, because what happens is the community gets created where it's like, everybody's on estrogen and GLP-1s. And it's working and they're feeling good. And I can kind of jump in and be like, yes, let's do this. So it's like, I can kind of use that as my endpoint versus it being like, you know, is everybody adding more protein into their diet and changing the narrative around it? I don't know what that looks like, but it's something that I would love to see, because it's also really empowering when it takes like a deeper action step. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I think there needs to be more personal responsibility, quite honestly. So women can opt into these medications. Let's just call them what they are. Medications, like a thyroid medication. I love that we can opt into it, but how do we empower people to actually proactively look at their diet and lifestyle and go, what I want is great, but we're not kids anymore. And what we want, if it's hurting us, should we not be able and be willing to cut it out for our better health? You know, and it's like this idea of like, I should be able to do what I want, live how I want, and my body just has to take it. And if it doesn't, then I'm gonna shove a prescription in its mouth. It's like, our bodies are incredibly intelligent. How do we lean into our incredibly intelligent bodies to support it? Now, there may be other reasons somebody opts into hormone replacement therapy. Maybe it's the longevity stuff that's attached to having these fertile hormones longer, right? Like, they're for people who are looking at longevity. But it's like the personal responsibility part goes beyond just picking up a prescription. It goes into our lives. And if we're each driving around a Ferrari, we got to think about what that Ferrari needs. We can't just be like, I'm going to roll up and put the cheapest fuel in and woohoo, party hardy.
Yeah, exactly. Just do the drive-through car wash. The personal responsibility is huge, but I also think that like, that's why I'm like the community piece. I'll hear some of my patients that, or, you know, I have groups of friends now that I'll treat and they'll all be out to dinner and we're like, okay, we got to get our sides of beans. So Dr. Hannah's like, you know, and so I'm like, oh my God, that makes me so happy, you know, yeah. Know that that's kind of like the community that gets created. And so then, cause we pull on our friends and our family to be like, well, I'm going through it. You went through it. What did you do? And so it kind of takes that person that we trust who's gone through it and that we have it together. And not everybody like needs that community support. I mean, I think everybody does, but some people need it more than others. And I think because you have your life experience and your education and who you are, you're like, I'm going to do this because I want to, and I'm the, you know, Aquarius. And so there is, oh, you're Pisces. Why do you think you're Aquarius?
I could give you Aquarius vibes, but I'm definitely, I mean, I'm cusp. So I probably do. What you're saying is true. I think people you respect, this is how I think people end up in fear mongering situations, because somebody they respect is saying, don't do something, right? The more people who are out there, not fear mongering, but educating and putting real life information and strategies in front of people to take that they trust, is also going to be doing an incredible amount of good for all the people that are doing an incredible amount of crappy stuff out there. And I was just like,
wait, I have to tell you, I won't say like which news network, but there was a very big news network, like mainstream news. And they were talking about like how beans are like the next thing. And I was like one of my patients was like, oh my gosh, I was watching da 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 da. And they were talking about beans. I was like, what?
I mean, I love that you incorporate beans because of your knowledge. Can you imagine being on hormone therapy and not having enough soluble fiber to clear it from your liver? Can you even imagine? Like, I think there's going to be a lot of fuckery because of that, quite honestly.
I'm going to give you, you know, these hormones, but I'm also going to put you on this very particular diet plan. And so then, you know, they're feeling good because of the estrogen, but then over time too, it's like, oh my gosh, I'm not constipated anymore. My sleep's been really good. So all these other things kind of come in. So I'm like, here's the estrogen, but here's the other stuff.
So you can keep clearing them from being recycled. An excess of our own innate hormones can cause cancer, right? So it's not simply HRT, it's how that's being processed in the body through the liver. So having that soluble fiber is just like this, what is it? It's your insurance policy of like, okay, I'm clearing what my body isn't using.
I haven't seen a case yet that doesn't need it.
Like, it wasn't ever this of like, oh, if I didn't learn it in school, it's not a thing. It's like, you were so open to being like, oh, this is a thing, you know?
Oh, and in school has to be like what it is. But I think there's a lot of things that you have to proactively learn outside of school, because they just have to teach you what they need for like all the credentialing and what's in the textbook. And there's just things that you hear where you're like, that's the truth. I know that for whatever reason. And, you know, because of you and Karen and what I learned and then what I geeked out on and then what I experienced myself and then what I have like consistently seen in patients. You need some fiber, some protein and some minerals, have some fat snacks.
It's mastering the basics, right? And I think a lot of the other things is being optimizations. And sometimes you need an optimization, like let's just say in your case, you're giving somebody a therapy and then they feel so good that maybe they end up getting off or maybe they end up staying on, who knows, but they've got the basics to support them. Like you can't, I think of like the three little piggies, you can't build a strong house if you have a shitty foundation. So it's like, get that foundation right and then build on that foundation. I wanted to ask you, because I saw that you do peptide therapy and I'm so fascinated. It's been around for a long time. And obviously now it's becoming to get a little regulated, which I think has gotten sticky for some people losing a lot of peptides that they used to use. But talk to us about peptides.
Yeah. So the cool thing about peptides is because they are signaling molecules, you're not really giving your body any type of exogenous substance that's going to tell your body to stop making it itself. They're communicating molecules to tell your cells to make certain things, typically for the most part. And so because of that, they're relatively safe and they're very effective when properly indicated. And so a lot of whether my patients are using them like post-surgery, a lot of it is for longevity, anti-aging, or more like aesthetic reasons. There's some that are really good for anxiety, mood. It's become another one of those therapies where patients feel a noticeable difference and it motivates them to continue to do the healthier lifestyle things. Mm-hmm. So it's become a very helpful tool in helping my patients feel better and look better and all those things. But it also becomes an action step to furthering the foundations, if that makes sense. I got into peptides probably like 5 years ago. I just thought like the things I read was fascinating. I saw how it helped patients. So I've been, for about 5 years, I've been geeking out on the peptides. I see them really help with energy, mood, muscle recovery. A lot of my active patients really like them.
Mm-hmm. Have you tried them?
Mm-hmm. So GHK Copper, the hair, skin, and nail peptide I love. Ooh. Is probably my favorite.
Really?
I have done the thymosin beta 4, like the TB500, that one for recovery. I do notice a difference that I'm not as sore. Anybody from any age can use them, but I do think that I see more of a difference as my patients kind of creep towards like their 40s. So like I think I'm 36. And so I feel like just now I'm kind of like, okay, now I want to try some of these growth hormone analogs, where before I felt like I had tried them and I didn't notice that much of a difference. And now I'm like, okay, maybe it's time that we add some more of these in.
I feel like everybody's got their peptide going on these days. I have a really good friend who's into longevity hacks and always optimizing. And what's funny is that we're the same age, and I feel like I'm, you know, like tracking with Whoop and everything, I'm aging slower than he is doing all of these things. And I'm like, He has a really high stress job too. Well, I think I'm also almost in menopause. So that's maybe menopause brain that I have.
I think the biggest thing is allowing yourself to have an individualized experience. So I think that when it comes to peptides, talk to somebody that works with peptides, ask them the questions that you have, because everybody is different and there's a lot of different peptides out there and you can get them from a lot of different places. And so I think that that's like kind of the take home, like whether it's like peptides or hormone therapies or what you're eating, like talk to somebody that does this like as a profession. I think sometimes because we can buy supplements or we can order things from the internet, this isn't like a DIY thing. Like, get support. I think finding support in like your healing journey is really important too. Don't get your information off of social media and influencers. Not that they're not great and they can introduce you to stuff. I think it's fantastic what they tell people about, but just work with a professional.
Yeah. Do you use genetic testing in your practice? Do you use gut microbiome testing? Like, I'm quite fascinated by, you know, genetics and gut microbiome. Like, it's just, to me, that's like where the area where I can't get enough information. I'm always like, I upload my genetics to everybody. I'm like, ooh, like, have my genetics. I have no, I am like a little genetic hoe. So yeah. What are your thoughts about this?
When I was in medical school, I actually did some research on epigenetics. I think there's more and more information and research coming out about some of the genetics. The panels are huge, but I would say there's a handful of ones that we really know and really can move the needle. Those are ones I tend to focus on. I usually go that route if I have a patient where we're doing some therapies and I am not getting the outcome that I'm expecting. I'm like, there's got to be some hidden thing that I don't know what's going on here. Or I have patients coming to me and just wanting to see what they are. And I think it's this individualized empowerment tool to just be like, oh yeah, I know that like I have the COMT and SUOX epigenetics, so I can be a little bit sensitive to X, Y, and Z. Just because you have it doesn't mean that you're going to have some of the symptoms that come along with it, but it's just powerful to know I'm somebody that's going to be a little bit more insulin resistant and I'm going to overproduce cholesterol a little bit. Cool. Let me make choices that support that. It's like astrology and human design. When you have this information about who you are, it empowers you to make those decisions that are sometimes hard to make when we're around people that aren't doing the same thing. But if you're just kind of like, well, I'm a Cancer sun, Capricorn moon, like, you know, 6-2 projector, blah, blah, blah. And also I have the SUOX and the COMT, like it gives you a little bit of that confidence to be like, there's a reason I'm making these choices and I have like evidentiary support to like understand my body. So I think that it's a massively helpful tool. A lot of my patients know theirs. It's not something you have to like retest. They don't change. And so it is like a good investment to just get it. I started using this company 3x4 Genetics. So I do think that getting it from like, don't do 23andMe. It's not as accurate. Mm-hmm. And you're going to want to work with a practitioner to solve it because you're going to get a lot of information that's very confusing.
I think with AI, that's going to change, because if you're like, I want to know, there's certain people out there that talk about where your genes bottleneck. Like, what is the things that are really going to bottleneck your genetics? Is it liver pathways? Like, I think, mm-hmm. you know, the fact that women don't have to get their genetics tested before going on HRT, I find a little questionable. What is it? Is it phase one or two of detoxification? What is it? What's going on? And what's the bottleneck? And obviously it can be more complex than that. Like I have slow COMT as well. So I'm not a good candidate for coffee or caffeine in general. Because of that, it slows down my ability to process adrenaline. I'm excited. I'm going to check out this company too.
They've created it. It does at least help by categorizing them and then prioritizing them.
Right.
And so when I'm looking at them, especially because I just know some of the information that I know, I can like look at somebody and be like, yeah, you know, your liver's a little this, and but what's, like you said, what's really going to move the needle are these things. So focus on these things. And that just takes time working with patients and understanding the genetics. The 3x4 helps with how they lay it out. It does make it a little bit easier with understanding those things. And again, it's, you do a little experiment with yourself. How do you feel when you take out caffeine? Do you feel better? Do you miss it? Do you,
the answer is you always miss it, even if you don't feel bad.
Emotionally, it will be hard.
It's like the thing that you can't walk away from. It's the bad boyfriend.
I feel like we've taken a journey. The journey feels complete.
I guess I do have one other question. Since you know your human design, how has knowing your human design changed the way you practice or anything? Like what has been like the biggest validation? I was the person who, when I was younger, I thought I was the flaky person because part of my design is that I try things. And if I get into them and I don't have the energy for them, I'll get out and walk away. So I was always trying things and walking away. And everybody's like, oh my God, Unique, you can't commit to anything. And I was like, oh, I feel so bad. Only to learn that my design is trial and error and kind of trying things and walking away. So it really validated my process. And that also I shouldn't make any big decisions until my emotional wave settles, right? I let the tidal wave finish and then I'm like, what do I really feel?
I'm a mental projector, which is like a not very common one. Knowing that I was a projector really helped because I had a lot of laziness shadow. And so like when I was in school, it was like I was sleeping 4 hours a night and president of this, and I was trying to be a man gen, and I just, that's not how I'm wired. And so resting a lot more, sleeping a lot more, like when I heard that we're only supposed to work 3 hours a day, I was like, cool. Like, I feel like I work really efficiently. I don't have a huge patient population. And I knew that's what I wanted when I was in school. And so I feel like it's helped keep me to where I know that I need to have more downtime than other people need to have. And so the resting piece was huge. As far as the mental projector, the mental part, I'm still kind of figuring out because it's really about being in an environment. So for me, that's why discovery calls are good, because sometimes I have to be in the energy to get the information. Sacral, it's like right there. What do you feel? And I have to go in the environment and then be by myself totally alone and process it and see how I feel. So giving myself a lot of alone time is really helpful. But I would say that the biggest thing is realizing that I have to rest a lot more and I can work less, more efficiently, and having that be my North Star.
Amazing. I love hearing how you've integrated it and to have efficient time. Amazing. Hannah, thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for taking the health journey with me.
I love you.
All right. I hope you enjoyed our lively conversation. It's always fun to get together with Hannah and talk health and wellness and just poke around what's going on, you know, in her world. Very different worlds that we live in. I will link all of her information so that you can, if you want to read more about her. All right. I hope you have a wonderful day, night, wherever you are in this beautiful world. See you next time.